Today on The Grave Talks, Discovering the Dead, a conversation with Amanda Quill. Amanda Quill had a very unique childhood, one that would leave her with many questions about the paranormal. She'd find herself moving from Canada to Scotland and then back to Canada again. With every path that she went down, she'd do all she could to read about and try to understand the world of the paranormal, in a world that at the time didn't want to talk about it. This drive would continue throughout her life and lead her to a journey of discovering the dead.
The spark starts when I'm really, really young, to be honest. And it does start with ghost stories. I spent my early years in Scotland, and my grandfather loved to tell me ghost stories. My grandfather loved to take me to haunted spots. And as he used to tell me, if your building doesn't have a ghost, then it doesn't have any spirit. So that's where it starts for me. Is Ayr, Scotland, and looking over at cemeteries, looking over at haunted buildings, and just wanting to know more.
How interesting. So this was in Scotland. Did you grow up there? Were you visiting? What was the setting for you in childhood?
Childhood, I was actually adopted. I was adopted from Canada.
Okay.
And I was adopted to Scotland.
Okay.
And
wow.
So that's a whole... a whole nother story.
Sure.
but yeah, so I went there at a young age. I was there for probably about 5 years, starting at about a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
And I was in more southern Scotland, and then we would go up and down. We had family who had a hotel, a very haunted hotel in Paisley, Scotland, and then we had family up in Edinburgh. So that is kind of like my introduction to ghosts and to storytelling. And I'm actually an Indigenous person, so storytelling is so important for me. So
sure.
I glommed on to it.
Yeah. I mean, So tell me more about, you know, what were specifically some of those first experiences and encounters? Like, how did it go? What was, you know, what? How did you walk through it? What did you experience? What were you thinking at the time?
I was just amazed. I was absolutely like it put a spell on me. It was absolutely just, just stop everything, get those goosebumps up, like that kind of experience for me. Even just walking over certain bridges, walking to certain parts in history, walking through cemeteries. There was always a story behind it. And yeah, I started listening to those stories, learning those stories, and that became part of history.
Mm-hmm.
It became part of like how I learned the history of the places that I was.
Yeah.
When I moved back to Canada, I found that it just didn't happen naturally anymore. So that's when I started hitting the libraries, hitting the ghost story books, hitting like every single thing that I could to learn more about where we were in Canada. I grew up by Vancouver, British Columbia, and there wasn't the history that there was in Scotland.
Sure.
So I just would just like Dewey Decimal System, going through those little things and learning every different name for ghosts, learning every single thing that I could, and trying to correlate that with the actual history of where I was. I mean, it really took me in Scotland that everywhere I would go, there was a ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
I came to Canada and there wasn't. I just found that odd.
Yeah.
That makes it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, obviously there are, but not nearly to the level, you know, because of the time, the history, the length that people have been there. Obviously the more of that, the more it lends itself then to ghost stories. Would you say, when you look back on this retrospectively, let me ask you this, are you as sensitive to ghosts? Are you empathic? Like, do you pick up on things a little more than the average person would?
I think I do to some degree. Now, it's funny because I never looked at myself or or my abilities or my sensitivities as something to do with ghosts. Mm-hmm. I always looked at that as more as like interacting with the live.
The living, say. Yes, yeah.
right? And it was actually one of my first team leads that I ever worked with that said to me, why don't you use your abilities as to ghosts? I already knew that I could work with spirit that way, but I never put two and two together that could help me with ghost hunting. And I still don't, because sure. I think that maybe that might... I don't want to be the person that says that I can walk into a building. Yep, it's haunted.
Sure.
Off we go.
I guess the comparison that I'm curious about is Scotland to Canada or North America, mm-hmm. and the level of sensitivity of things that you just naturally pick up on. When you visited there, have you visited there as an adult?
I have.
Okay. So having visited there and then coming back to the States and stuff, obviously there's the mental aspect of it, of just knowing that there's much more history there, but there's also just the feeling of it. Do you feel like there's more of a connection, like you're in more places where there's more spirits per square foot than there are in Canada?
Well, sir, that's an excellent question, because I don't feel that way. I feel that there is more of an untouched history on the land that we're on here.
Okay.
And being an Indigenous woman, I feel that very strongly. I think that the ghosts or the spirits or the stories that are told over in Scotland or the UK, wherever you go, are much deeper than they're talked about here.
Sure.
I think that we have a rich history. We have a like thousands and thousands of years mm-hmm. of legends, of ghost stories, of everything, but it's untapped because we don't talk about the actual Indigenous history here.
Yeah, that's true. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
That it's not discussed, because that's just it. It seems like the culture in the UK and Scotland and that, it's been part of life for quite a while as just a normal thing that people talk about. And it wasn't so, faux pas. I mean, honestly, in the States, it's had its, ups and downs in terms of over centuries, where it's like it kind of gets talked about and believed more, and then it's all put to the side. And in more recent times, it's been the last 10, 20 years that it's become, mm-hmm. You can openly talk about this without people thinking you might have something wrong with you.
Exactly. Well, and I think too that people want to look at the history as, as a negative thing, where we can look at the history of the land. We can look at the history of the people that have, sacrificed so much to be here and sacrificed so much to stay here. We don't have to look at the negative side of things. We can, we can celebrate the history too.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of that obviously I think sometimes the attraction going into paranormal things starts with, inherently kind of negative because it's spooky and you mm-hmm. you get kind of drawn to it, but there's a ton of positivity with it as well. So tell me more, you had these feelings over there. You got more and more intrigued. Did you have any experiences in your childhood at the time that you were in Scotland one-on-one, like with a paranormal event or moment or anything like that?
It's funny because the answer honestly is no. I never had a walk-in experience or anything. I got a book that I didn't understand. And I used to take out every single book in the library, every single, even comic book that had a ghost story in it.
Sure.
And I would read and read and read. Like, I was so just taken by these stories. And then there was one book, and it was more about theory, and it was more about how do we find these ghosts. And I was like, whoa, this is written by someone who believes these stories. And it just absolutely blew my mind. I was like, what if ghosts do exist? Would I be scared? That's what got me, was the fact that there were people out there that actually were doing this. And I even researched into going to school to do this for a living, and I couldn't. How do I become Scooby-Doo when I grow up?
Exactly. I just
couldn't find that that kind of avenue for myself. So I put the book away, and I wrote down a few names, and I waited until I was older. I didn't think I was old enough. I would have been about 8 at this time. And I didn't think I was old enough to understand. I also didn't think I was old enough to see a ghost, which is so funny because that was my legit belief.
That's interesting. And, you thought that way. You weren't old enough.
I'm not old enough to see a ghost.
I'm old enough to do the bumper cars, but not to see a ghost yet. Yeah.
Exactly. But am I tall enough to see ghosts?
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
It was very much that way, which really does, to me, lead into a lot of like my belief that, you know, a lot of this is up to the individual person's belief and belief system, which we can get into more of that later.
Sure.
But at that time, it just, I wasn't ready, or I wasn't, you know. So then after that, I took out a book, and it was about President Lincoln. And I was like, whoa, this is like a real, this is a real person. And then the ghost stories and reading those ghost stories over and over again. And these are serious people in our history. And that kind of more lended itself to that ghosts are real.
Yeah.
Like it's this is a true ghost story about someone that I can't really relate to him, but I could, being back in Canada, being back in North America, he was more of that serious figure.
Right? Yeah.
So it kind of lended itself to my belief in, okay, what next? What next? So I didn't have that experience young at age. I did go back when I was 12, and my family had a hotel that was haunted in Paisley, Scotland. And they said, every night at 9 p.m., the ghost rings the doorbell. And so we would always hear it. My brother would be hiding in the stairs. So I used to, like, they would, my aunts and uncles and my parents would always kind of like set themselves up at the bottom of the stairs and wait for us to come down and listen for the ghost. So I started to know where they were. So I would sneak out of the hotel, go around and hide in the bushes. And that's how I found out it was my Uncle John who was ringing the doorbell.
And the mystery is gone.
Exactly. And then I figured out where I felt more energy in the hotel. So I would go and I would hide myself in like cabinets. And this is like 12-year-old ghost hunting, okay?
Sure, yeah. No, I get it.
I would hide myself under little buffet tables and like wait for the ghosts to come out. And because they were always expecting me to be somewhere else, they wouldn't be looking for me.
Sure.
So there you go. That's a ghost hunting 1987 style.
Yeah, exactly. No, I get it. I mean, I never personally had an experience either when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much go to the library, get every book you possibly can on the subject. And the funny thing with me is I always wanted to be on the radio, like since the age of 2. And I ended up doing radio for 20 years commercially before I get into podcasts. But at 2, I was pretending I was on the radio. And the ironic thing is what I was doing was a talk show into my tape recorder. And it was about ghosts. So this is like 1984
That's amazing. And
I still have tapes of it. And I mean, and how crazy is it that, you know, nearly, you know, 40 years later, here I am, and this is what I do for a living. It's what I like, what I really initially at my core wanted to do as a 2-year-old. Now it's my career.
That's awesome, right?
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so bizarre. But I get it. Like, it doesn't always take the experience itself to make you, to give you that drive, to give you that interest. Because, I mean, I would run around cemeteries and just explore and the history. And I just, I felt where a lot of people, I think, get creeped out in settings like that. I felt at peace. I felt really like at home. Like I didn't feel that scared. Were there areas that seemed a little spookier than others? Sure. But the majority of it was just like, this is interesting. I really feel good around all these dead people. and it was just, it was an interesting, happy place for me. The cemetery is a happy memory. And I soaked that in, and I don't consider myself very sensitive. I think I'm more empathic than I thought I was. But you can just kind of sense some things sometimes. So you had these interests and these experiences of being interested in diving into this. How did that continue into life and to where you did have a paranormal experience? Did that start when you started investigating, or was there something in adulthood that happened prior to that that, you know, kind of made you go, oh my gosh?
Well, for me, I ended up living in, I came back to Canada and I was a ward of the court. I was in care. So I lived in a few foster homes. I lived in a few group homes. And one of the group homes that I lived in, that's kind of where everything changed. And it was right before I kind of aged out of care. So I was a little bit older. And as soon as I walked in, I just knew this place was different. There was a feeling, there was an energy. Now, there was eight of us, eight females in between the ages of at sometimes 12, but usually 13 to 16. And we'd all had a little bit of trauma in our life. We all had a lot of emotional baggage, let's say.
Sure.
Which we all know can lead to a little bit of activity.
Yeah.
So in this house, and to this day, I've never seen anything in my years and years of research, years of investigating. I've never seen anything like it, where we would have books flying off the shelf. We had like crown molding popping off the walls. We had like scratches in the walls. We had things flying out of cupboards, and we couldn't explain it. The staff would always blame us for it, so we would always get in trouble for it, and then it would just like heighten and heighten and heighten. That just absolutely blew me away, but I was obsessed. I once again was hiding in cupboards and trying to capture.
So you did a full 360 on it as well too, where
I think I've actually even thought about it. What if I build a hide in a haunted location and just hide there? That's how you really, really get.
I tried that with the Easter Bunny once, and it did not work.
It did not work. Yeah. See, Easter Bunny for some people goes further.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, same concept. I'm like, I'm going to catch this damn thing, or I'm going to prove it's my parents. Yeah. One of the two. I hid in a cardboard box and then fell asleep and woke up in the morning and the eggs were spread out.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, why are we spending all this money on equipment when all we need is the box it came in?
Exactly. All you need is a fridge box and you're good to go. Yeah.
Exactly. But that's where things did change for me. And there was one woman that worked there, and she passed a few years ago, but she ended up being one of my mentors for most of my life, like absolute wonderful, wonderful woman. And she came into one of the rooms I was in, and she said, "You feel it, you know it." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Okay, crazy lady, like leave me alone." And she's like, "You can feel the earth move." And I was like, "Okay, what is this turning into?" And she's like, the activity like completely skyrocketed when you walked in here.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And she's like, "I know." She's like, "You walk with spirit." And that's the first time I actually ever heard that term.
Yeah.
And walk with spirit actually is something that I've reunited with my family, and everything is absolutely wonderful in that world. But there's always one that walks with spirit in our family. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't one in our generation until I reunited. And they said, "That's where you were." And it really got me when she said that. And then, and she kind of held me to task with that. So she's the one that got me into investigating. So I was investigating kind of right out of high school.
Yeah.
And because she thought that I could relate to younger families and I could relate to children in this situation. So that's why I was kind of brought into it. So I started investigating after that house. But let's go back to that house for a bit.
Yes, let's.
Because that house, I think was my only true experience with any sort of real poltergeist activity. And to this day, I'm absolutely fascinated with my own experience, because how can we investigate that more? How can we actually research that more? Mm-hmm. Because you don't want anyone to be feeling those emotions, to feeling that heightened stress, especially young women and men, like, to go through that. But I think that there's a way that we can, and I think that we just haven't touched it, and we're missing so much with our kind of concepts or things that we go to mm-hmm. now, which is like that kind of instant gratification ghost hunting.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if we could actually put our emotions and our feelings and our everything into it again, how can we recreate that? And if poltergeist or a PK thing, well, let's do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that some people have gone so far beyond that, and the rest of us kind of missed out, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with poltergeist activity, and you hear different opinions on it, because everything is just complete conjecture on any of this that we're talking about. But what I've been wondering about more with things of that nature is a lot of times people are searching for, well, you know, who's doing this? What's the name of the ghost, or what type of ghost is it, or this or that? How much of activity like that is us haunting ourselves? With our own energy, it's not anybody dead. It's not a ghost. It's not a demon. It's not an angel. It's us, and it's mm-hmm. our waves of energy doing what they do naturally, but we don't understand how they're working yet, and we don't really have a way to. But it kind of gets out there and does its thing, and it confuses the hell out of us because we don't understand what's going on.
Absolutely, and that's like exactly what I'm thinking too. It's like, if it is our emotions, if it is our belief systems, if it's our own ego, and that's the one I'm stuck on right now, is the ego, because we all want to get that thing. Mm-hmm. We all want to, but we don't want to be able to explain it. So it's like, yeah, I think that our ego is what drives us. Our egos are so where's the experiment on that? Why aren't we doing research into our own ability to kind of like throw that out there?
That's what I wonder about, because everybody's trying to communicate. Everybody's got a box for something. And and some of it's interesting. Now, I don't discount that, but I also think that's not always the answer. It's not always somebody or something. It's, I think, sometimes ourselves. And then the idea that, you know, enough of it can get out there, and for it to create its own somewhat conscious type thing, that's even spookier to me than a dead ghost. This idea that our collective energy can get balled up in such a way that it is seemingly doing things that with purpose.
Right. And exactly. And I can't remember the term for it, but it's like when you kind of like believe in your little fuzzy friend that's beside you, that it becomes a spirit itself.
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing. And also, I mean, like you said, everything, you know, we have a box for everything. We have all these gadgets that we're coming up with, but are we going the wrong way with them? Like, are we trying to actually make this box create a figure on a screen, rather than, why don't we, like, the only way I can describe it is if you look at the psychomantium, and I know I really mispronounced that, but people that are looking at with near-death experience, with like out-of-body experience and everything. Now you look at what we're doing with like SLS cameras and all that kind of stuff. Why aren't we trying to recreate these other things? Why hasn't nobody gone into virtual reality with this? So if we are going to create something that we can go into another, like using technology, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like I've gone so far off the path now.
No, I know. I mean, it's hard to quantify what we're talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly. And that's the word to quantify any of it.
Yeah.
Right?
In any sort of controlled setting. Those are the two things that are missing, where it's like,
but rather than create the ghost, why don't we create the space a ghost will come to? Mm-hmm. Why don't we create that kind of environment? Why don't we give more to the ghost than give more to creating a fake ghost, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things that I wonder about with that, and including the question that I've been asking, and I'm interested to hear your opinion of when we have things like residual hauntings, where it's someone seeing a figure, an example, like a woman carrying a baby up and down a stairwell or something like that, never seems to really interact with anybody, but people see this over and over, and there is a record of a woman that died that did that on a regular basis, something like that. When we have those sort of things, does it, and it, if it's not the conscious spirit of that person, couldn't we be right now walking around in everything we do, putting our own little residual stamp on things that other people are then seeing and going, is that a ghost? I wonder when they died. Do we have to be dead to have a residual, to have created a residual haunting? Meaning if we're in a traumatic situation or something, could that just be replaying by itself? We can be alive in a different place and time, but why do you need to die if you're truly not over there? Your consciousness is not over there. Why do you need to be dead for that to suddenly be launched, you know, many years after you were even there?
Exactly. And when I love doing EVP sessions.
Yeah.
One of the questions I always ask is, have you seen me before? Whether or not I've been there before, I always say, have you seen me before?
Sure.
Have we been here before? Have we met before? All those kind of, because of that same question, is like, what if this is all just like kind of, we're all just replaying this like a little stamp that we've made, all our little footsteps on the stairs, all the little things that we do every single day. And I look at when huge things are happening in the world, when, why are most of the ghosts that we see wearing Victorian dresses? Why are, you know, when there was a huge spiritual movement in those times, like, are we going to be doing this now, like 100 years from now, or even 10 years from now? Or are all the ghosts going to be wearing masks because we were pacing our houses, wondering when we can get out again? Yeah. Like, these are things that I think about. And I do see the difference with residual hauntings and things that are there now. Someone just said on a investigation I was on just last week, and they came up to me and said, all I'm getting is a lot of residuals. And I didn't get a chance to ask them, what is a residual to you?
What did they mean by that?
Yeah. And I was like, so interested in, like, have we gone so far from what a residual haunting is that we're now, oh, I got a couple of residuals back there, but I'm like, how did you get them?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where we're losing the plot a little bit, is we're losing what these things mean. Like, okay, well, that ghost comes here quite often.
Sure.
Residual doesn't mean a regular.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, but at the same time, I love the fact that people are seeing the difference. Now, when I was younger and researching, I used to think that there was haunted places or a haunting in a house, and it basically kind of like goes back to that residual or an intelligent haunting. Now with the technology that we're all using today, we're losing that again. So we're losing finding what a residual is, finding if it is just an imprint, if it's like what the house is built on, or what, like, the environment is giving us to make those kind of notches in the old bedpost of hauntings, you know?
Yeah.
I get a little frustrated with it. So
sure.
I'm losing my words here. But yeah, it's like, that's what I think about. I think the residuals are absolutely fascinating. And I think that we need to do more digging into them to really understand what a ghost is.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter how many ghosts you capture on your you know, DR60 or your ghost box or whatever the heck you're using, it matters that you're figuring out what it is, what is sticking around, and why is it sticking around, and what does that mean to us?
Sure.
You know, how is that even, like, making our life better, chasing the dead?
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Amanda Quill in part two. Does Amanda think that we are capturing more evidence of paranormal now than in the past? How does the physical environment have a bearing on when or how we communicate with the dead? Why is the current house that Amanda lives on the most haunted? And is seeing ghosts up to a person's individual belief system? Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.